Good evening and welcome to the June 2018 meeting of the Health Commission for the San Luis Obispo County. We welcome you all here this evening. Before we start our agenda this evening, I wanted to take a minute to recognize and thank our two retiring health commissioners, neither of which are with us this evening, but still they're important to us, and we want to thank them for all their hard work on the commission for the last few years. And that would be Claire Grantham and David Klaus. We do have a certificate of appreciation for each of them from our county board of supervisors, and I will ask Jean to go ahead and get them mailed off to them since they're not here with us this evening, but we will miss them. We thank them for their input, their effort, and all their expertise that they've shared with us over the last few years. Our next item is to approve our minutes from our last meeting, which was our May 2018 meeting. Any comments, additions, corrections? I think I did notice one, Jean. It was the instead of the Oral Health Coalition under commissioner reports, it was the Tobacco Coalition that I went in place of David Klaus. And I'll continue to go to that until we assign that to somebody else. So if anybody wants to step up to the plate and volunteer, we are accepting volunteerism. All right. Any other comments? If not, we'll ask Jean to get them published as she always does. This is the part of our agenda where we will invite public comment. If we have any persons with us this evening desiring to speak on issues other than what are on our scheduled items but are within the scope of interest of our health commission, please come forward. And seeing no one come forward, we will go ahead and welcome our speaker for this evening. This evening we have with us Wendy Wendt, who is Executive Director of First Five of San Luis Obispo County. It has been 20 years since we've had First Five, so we're anxious to hear from Wendy what they've been doing, what they have planned for us in the future, and where we are with First Five. So welcome, Wendy.
Thank you, Mary Jean. I'm excited to be here tonight. I can't remember exactly whose idea this was, whether it was Dr. Bornstein's or my idea, but we were having a conversation recently about the work of the Health Commission and the work of the First Five Commission, otherwise known as the Children and Families Commission. And it occurred to both of us that I'm not sure when, if ever, there's been a presentation to the Health Commission about the work of First Five. And so it's certainly not since I've begun as executive director about 3.5 years ago. So this seemed like a perfect opportunity, especially on the advent of the 20th anniversary of First Five in the state of California, to share a little bit of information about what we are as an organization, what we work on both locally and across the state of California, and to perhaps enter into a little bit of a dialogue about the work of our organization, answer any questions you might have. So what I'm sharing with you tonight feels a little bit like preaching to the choir. I don't feel like I need to give you the rationale necessarily behind why First Five, but I'm going to, just for the sake of getting us in the mood and also giving you a little bit of a backstory into how we shape our conversations with policy leaders, whether in the public or private sector, at the local or the state level. And so I'm bringing to you some pieces of a presentation that I did recently for the Board of Supervisors back in April in the Month of the Child. So Jean, I'm going to try this. Where do I point it to make it work? Hold a moment.
Or I can just sort of high sign you.
Hold that thought. And in fact, while she's doing that, I'm going to give you some folders. I want you to promise me not to open them right now because I want to walk through what the materials are without you getting distracted. So, what if? So, We ask this question all the time amongst ourselves in the First Five family, but we also ask it of our policy leaders and other members of the public. What if our society's success was measured by the well-being of our youngest children? And by youngest, we're talking about children before they're born up until the age of five. And what if our families and our public and private leaders weighed every decision with the question, how might this choice affect our kids? What if that was part of the conversation among leaders, families, both in the private and public sector? How might this choice, whatever this choice is, whether it's a choice around housing, land use, economic development, how might this choice affect the over 50,000 children living in this county? Or the almost 17,000 children who are under the age of six? Or what if we took a look at the close to 19,000 children who live in Latino homes? Or the over 7,000 children living in poverty? We do a lot of talking in the First Five world about why communities should prioritize children, and it depends on who you talk to and what mood that person is in, what the logic might be. And we talk about prioritizing young children because science tells us it's critical. I'm looking at Candace. She spends time in the field of academia asking that question. What does science tell us about why it's important to pay attention to early childhood? If you were to ask an economist, there are economists who've done some incredible work around the monetary value of why spend money on programs that benefit young children. And there's quite a lot of work that's been done of late in the world of economics. And ultimately, and this reminds me of something, Jean, you and I were talking about, why is it important? Because our hearts tell us it's the right thing to do. So I want to unpack for you each of those three arguments a little bit. So in the last 10 years, even since First Five has come into being, there is a wealth of scientific evidence that is reinforcing what we've always known to be the case, which is that the first 5 years of a child's life, I would say even the first 3 years of a child's life, are critically important years in a person's existence, and you can't get them back. Just three examples in the world that I live in and what reinforces the work that we do. They say 90% of a child's brain is formed by the time she's five. There's a whole body of research that's come out in the last 20 years around a study that was called the ACEs study. I don't know if that has crossed your radar, any of you, but it stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. And if you're interested, please do learn more about this ACEs study and the concept of linkages between early adverse childhood experiences and long-term negative health outcomes over the course of a person's lifetime. And so people are paying very close attention now, even more than before, to what's happening in early childhood and how that might have either positive or negative outcomes later in life. There's another body of evidence that has to do with early literacy and how much word exposure a child has before the age of five. And there have been studies that can document a relationship between the number of words that a child hears and their the connection to their life in poverty. So children who live in low-income households, for various reasons, are exposed to many fewer words, as many as 30 million fewer than their neighbors in more affluent families. And word exposure is directly linked to literacy. Literacy is directly linked to school success. School success is directly linked to life success. So you can see the patterns. These are just three examples in the scientific community of areas that we're really paying close attention to around early childhood. So if that's not enough to convince a policymaker, let's take a look at the economics. One of our champions in the world of economics is a Nobel laureate economist by the name of James Heckman, who has done a number of studies measuring the return on investment for quality early learning and early childhood development programs as related to outcomes, life outcomes later in a child's life. And they've measured up to a 13% return on investment for comprehensive early childhood programs. James Heckman has a wonderful website and body of research. If you look up the Heckman equation, .org. You'll be able to find a lot of his work. And he's moved on from early childhood education programs to looking at other child development program models and measuring the return on investment. Another example, recently the Silicon Valley Foundation in our state of California worked on an estimate that there would be a 10% increase. If there was a 10% increase in preschool enrollment in Los Angeles alone, we could potentially capture almost $11 billion return on investment in our economy. It's not so recent anymore, but it still holds the test of time. Study by the RAND Corporation predicted the return on investment for a universal preschool program in California, what that would bring us back in savings, somewhere between about $2.50 to $4 in savings for every dollar spent. So for the economists in the room, this is a double win. But honestly, this is where I find my motivation and reason to come to work every day. It's the moral argument. The life, our children's lives are at their most vulnerable during those first 5 years. They depend on us to make decisions for them. They don't vote. I find it really interesting, ever since I started working at First Five, to pay attention to the priorities that get addressed in, say, presidential debates or gubernatorial debates. It is third or fourth down the list before people talk about children because they're not the ones voting. It's really an interesting lens to look through the political debates when you think about the lives of young children. So it's up to us as adults to prioritize their needs. So this is what we do at First Five. We pay attention to the lives of young children, partly because of the moral argument, partly because of the economic argument, and for sure because of the scientific argument. And it's our job at First Five, whether in San Luis Obispo or San Mateo County or Mendocino County, any one of the 50 counties in California, we're all doing our part to focus our community's attention on and resources on the lives and needs of our youngest children, with a common vision across California that they are healthy, thriving, and ready to learn. Whatever learning means by the time they hit five, it's our job to be paying attention to those critical early years and investing in a variety of ways, which I'll explain in just a minute, to help ensure their success. So, as Mary Jean said, we've been at this for 20 years. For those of you who were living in California in 1998, you may or may not remember voting, hopefully, for Proposition 10, which instituted a 50-cent per pack tobacco tax on all tobacco products. And it was that revenue that was then, according to the statute, designated for First Five programs throughout the state of California. And so in 1999, after Proposition 10 passed, every one of the 58 counties in California formed a First Five commission and an agency to make decisions about, based on local needs, local priorities, how to spend those funds to best serve the needs of local kids and their families. We are all individualized, and we're very much on boots on the ground agencies, but we also form a really tight state network, so we have this really wonderful opportunity to both act locally, but then also advocate at more of a regional and state level. It's really a wonderful kind of dual mechanism to get boots on the ground and money in the hands of organizations and programs that are serving our kids, but also move policy discussions and priorities up the food chain into the conversations in Sacramento. We are governed by a commission of 9 members, and every county has a slightly different ordinance that dictates how many commissioners a First Five would have on their board. It's somewhere between 7 and 9. We chose to have 9 by statute, and this is our current list of commissioners. You'll see at the top, you recognize one of them sitting in the room tonight. At any given point in the last 20 years, we've always had on our commission the head of the public health department, the county superintendent of schools, the head of the Department of Social Services, somebody from the medical community. At the moment, we have a dentist on our commission. We always have a designated representative from the Board of Supervisors. I'm skipping down one. We always have somebody representing the Children's Services Network, somebody from the local Child Care Planning Council, and then two community representatives. So at the moment, our two community representatives are Janet Murphy, who is a retired faculty member from Cal Poly, and Bob Watt, who recently retired as principal of Cambridge Grammar School. And so it's a wonderful board. We meet about 8 times a year, approximately every other month with a break for the summer. And they are our policymaking, direction-setting body. We also, I'll comment about our staff. We're a lean, mean staff in San Luis Obispo. We have 4 staff members, only 2 of whom are full-time. You're looking at one of them, and my associate director, Jason Wells. We also have a communications and outreach part-time officer, and then we have a special projects coordinator who's helping us on a couple of programs, which I'll tell you about in just a minute. So the money, the resources that flow down from the state to local communities is distributed according to birth rate. So we are considered in San Luis Obispo County one of the smaller mid-sized counties. We receive about $1.5 million a year into the community, about 90% of which is put out into community-based programs, which I'll share with you in just a minute. If you look at the other counties in California, a county like Siskiyou or Del Norte is teeny, teeny, tiny. They get somewhere, you know, under $500,000 a year. And if you go all the way to the big one in Los Angeles County with over 100 staff members, they receive about $25 million a year at this point. Now, one other comment I'll make about the revenue source. If you remember when I described what the source of the revenue is, it's tobacco tax, which is an interesting sort of double-edged sword, right? We want smoking to go down. We always have wanted it to go down. It was meant to be a kickstarter on a new era of support for early childhood programs, but no one ever hoped that this would be the only source of revenue over time. The idea was that this funding source in the form of tobacco revenue would mobilize local resources as well as inspire other sources of revenue, either public or private, across the state. And to some extent, that's happened. Perhaps we can talk about some of those areas of future funding opportunity at the end of the presentation. But at any rate, so we, both locally and in First Fives across the state of California, work in a number of different ways to maximize our influence. First of all, we focus on priorities. We have a robust strategic plan that gets revisited every 4 or 5 years. We're in the midst of one right now. It's a 2016 to 2020 strategic plan, and I'll share with you in a minute some of the key kind of stakes in the ground on that strategic plan. We invest in good work, so we act in part of our business almost like a mini foundation, where we have a certain amount of funding that we distribute through some form of request for proposals or strategic partnership or other way, so we grant out money into the community. We also play an increasingly strong role, and actually always have, but it's more and more of our function, as connectors and catalyzers. Because we spend so much time thinking about early childhood, not just in the health world, not just in the education world, not just in the family support world, but across all of those worlds, we tend to be seen as a neutral broker or connector, convener around good ideas. And I'll give you an example or two in just a few minutes. And at the end of the day, we're advocates, which is where I started my presentation today. We spend time both at the local level and at the state level, helping people understand why this is so important. And we sometimes do it in the form of public awareness campaigns. If any of you watch any television at all, you probably know about the Talk, Read, Sing campaign, which is a state effort to build public awareness around the very simple and straightforward notion that it's a good idea to talk, read, and sing to your kids. Doesn't seem like we should have to be convincing families and childcare providers and others in the community to think about that, but we do, especially in the age of technology. And at a time when we're understanding that even a two-month-old, not even, especially a two-month-old, needs their parent or their caregiver to be communicating with them, serving and returning constantly, that they're taking it in, that their brain synapses are firing at incredible rates. So that's an example of advocacy in the public awareness building domain, but we also get involved in educating legislators, private sector community. We're involved we're starting to get going on a project to reach out to the private sector as employers around family-friendly workplace practices, culture, policies that they might not know are possible or legal. And so it's our job as advocates to elevate or to amplify opportunities for systems to do better by children. So even if our money isn't going into it, our voices and our advocacy work is a part of trying to make lives better for children and families. Okay, so the four priorities that are the focus of our current strategic plan, and it doesn't dramatically change from plan to plan, but we sometimes emphasize one thing over another. A prior strategic plan, for example, had an initiative focused specifically on oral health, children's oral health, because it hadn't received enough attention in prior years. And so the strategic plan that just culminated in 2016 had identified that as one of our initiative areas. In this strategic plan, our commission was really interested in focusing on, we used to laugh about it in the office, early as possible. Let's make sure our investments, our attention, our activities are focused as early as possible. So we created what we call the perinatal readiness priority area, meaning support for families from the time they know they're pregnant or even before, some of our field nurses would say, all the way until the first 6 months of a child's life, that critically vulnerable and important time in both a child and her parents' lives. There's a second initiative, which I highlighted in green because this is a health commission, so I'm going to spend a little bit of extra time talking about the child health and development priority area. We also have a large set of investments in early learning. That's not just direct infusions of support into preschool slots, as they call it, but also professional development for teachers and family child care providers, as well as programs that support parents as first teachers. So imagining the role of a parent as her child's first teacher. And then finally, our fourth priority area is our family strengthening area, because as you all know, a child's health and well-being is only as strong as that of her family or his family. And so we have programs and investments and advocacy focal points that have to do with the family of families of young children. So I mentioned a second reason that I think we do good work. It's because we invest in what we know is a good idea. And so we wanted to give you a sense of some of our favorite programs and the kind of reach that we have. As I mentioned to you, about $1.7 million comes into our community every year. And this was in 2016-17, a few highlights. We have a long-standing and much beloved and very cost-effective program to offer vision screening for children under the age of 5. And the logic here is get them glasses before they hit the classroom. Why wait? How often have we heard stories about, you know, little Susie or Johnny in the back of the classroom who can't see but doesn't know to tell anybody that that's why he's not participating? So this is an opportunity. This is a chance to move that screening way earlier in a child's life. We have similar programs in dental screening where we have dental professionals going into WIC clinics and preschools and making sure that children are getting screened and finding their way to dental homes. We have with the Public Health Department, we fund WIC clinics that focus on breastfeeding for low-income moms. It includes a peer support model as well as lactation consultation with a professional. We distribute, if any of you have friends or yourselves have given birth in the local hospitals in the last 20 years, you will know that first 5 kits are distributed countywide to new families. It includes information on everything from what to do when your child gets sick to how to understand developmental milestones and everything in between. We have focused over the last at least 10, if not more than 10 years on two communities in San Luis Obispo County that are have particularly vulnerable child populations. That's Oceano and North Paso Robles in the Georgia Brown neighborhood. And we've established what we call school readiness neighborhoods, where every year we reach 200 plus families in a variety of activities, including family advocacy work, early literacy, and connections to the school for families and kids. We did pay for additional slots to allow additional children who are just above the income threshold to be able to attend preschool. And we have also recently entered into several funding partnerships to help, I mentioned this a few minutes ago, to help preschools and family child care providers increase the quality of their service to families across the county. So at the moment we have, it's more than that now, I'd say closer to 70 early childhood education programs involved in this quality rating and improvement system, which we affectionately call Quality Counts. The rating word is a bit scary, so we renamed it. So, as I said, because this is the Health Commission, I thought you might want to know what are our specific investments in health and development. At the moment, we have a contract with Optometric Care Associates. I mentioned the vision screening project. We support pediatric physical therapy services to provide early intervention services for children who don't qualify for services through Tri-County's Regional Center, but they have the beginnings of some sort of a challenge or issue, whether it's speech or behavioral issues or what have you. And so pediatric physical therapy services provides services for those kids. We have two oral health projects at the moment. One is that we help support, along with county public health, countywide coordination of an oral health coalition as well as an oral health program manager, which didn't exist before both First Five and public health stepped up to make that a funded position inside the county public health department. We also helped make it possible for Tolosa Children's Dental Center, which was founded in North County, but was hearing of needs in the central region of the county. First Five Funds enabled them to open one day a week in San Luis Obispo itself. They use the Noor Dental Clinic on South Higuera on Thursdays, and those patient visits are funded partly through First Five. And then last but not least, we also fund a small project called the Health Access Training Project, which is a group of professionals in health and health policy who design both workshops and also materials on a variety of topics that have to do with health access, whether it's oral health, mental health access for children and families who are undocumented immigrants and are looking for ways to make sure that they can stay healthy in the face of change and transition. And so the Health Access Training Project designs workshops in response to needs that come up. So those are our current investments in health and development. Any questions before I hit the home stretch? Should I keep going?
Keep going. We'll have some after, I'm sure.
Okay. So I mentioned that another way that I feel that First Five is effective is that we have this catalyzing, connecting function. And so I've just given you a set of examples, some current and some where we were among the launchers and they're now going concerns, not necessarily with direct First Five funding or involvement, but First Five was there when. Martha's Place being a prime example. The Children's Health Initiative, which was functional for a number of years in the era when children's health insurance wasn't a guarantee. And so we were investors and conveners around a community initiative to ensure that more children were received health insurance. We have hosted over the years a number of children's summits. We were involved in raising the funds for and building a family park in the northern part of Paso Robles, which is called the Paso Robles Uptown Family Park. We've hosted a variety of town halls and forums throughout the community, the most recent of which was a couple years ago. We screened a documentary film series called Raising of America. It's another one for you to note to self. It's possible to go online and see episodes of this documentary film series, which is a very, very powerful and profound commentary on what I was talking about before, the value of investing in children. I mentioned the Nobel laureate, James Heckman. He features rather prominently in this documentary film series. At any rate, on the left, the list on the left is where we're spending a lot of our time right now. We're active members in the Children's Oral Health Coalition. And yes, I think that's where I met Mary Jean. We've, in the last couple of years, helped establish a group called the P5, meaning prenatal to five, Children's Advocacy Network, which, for lack of a better descriptor, feels like a common watering hole for people who are involved in early childhood work in all the domains I described before: health, education, family support. And it gives them a bi-monthly opportunity to come together, share information, network, and when called upon, advocate together on behalf of children. Quality Counts, I mentioned, is the work that we're involved in both as investors but also as conveners to help improve the quality of early childhood education in family child care homes as well as in preschools and other centers. We have been at the forefront of a number of conversations in the last year since the advent of new policies that have put the livelihoods and mental health of immigrant families in a compromised space. And so we've helped host a variety of conversations with providers on how to help children in the face of uncertainty feel safe. And so that's been an area where we haven't put a whole lot of money on the table, but we spent a lot of time helping bring those conversations together and to the surface. And I saved the best for last. Help Me Grow, also highlighted in green, because this is for sure in the wheelhouse of the Health Commission, is a movement that was started, I want to say, about 20 years ago on the other side of the country in Connecticut. And it found its way to California by way of Orange County. And it's now spreading across California. And San Luis Obispo is the next county that's poised to mobilize and activate a Help Me Grow system. In short, and I think my next slide outlines it, yes, it's a framework. It's not a program. It's a framework that brings agencies, families, and providers across a community together to ensure that children 0 to 5 are reaching their optimum development. And it focuses on doing better around helping parents understand developmental milestones, making it easy for them to place a call or go to a website or drop in somewhere and get information on their child's development, ask questions. And it is also meant to link conversations among parents, childcare providers, and the pediatric community. What we hear over and over again is that everybody's well-meaning in this area of early childhood development, and detection, screening, and intervention, referral and intervention, but it gets confusing very quickly for families. And so this Help Me Grow system is an attempt to simplify for everyone the way that parents and children are supported in those early years. So we are in the planning stages right now. We're moving fast towards implementation. In every community that executes a Help Me Grow system, there you'll find some version of four components. One is that there's some sort of relationship building with the child health care provider community. There's also broad-based community outreach to families as well as other ancillary providers around the concept of developmental milestones and comprehensive developmental screening. There's typically, in the Help Me Grow systems that are doing their best, some sort of centralized access point, a phone number, a hotline, a physical center, or some combination of the above, where families with questions about their child's development know where to go. And then finally, and this speaks to the kind of shared storytelling across Help Me Grow systems, there is a component around data collection and sharing so that we can see from point A to point B how we're moving the dial on getting more information out to parents and getting them the support that they need faster than we did before. So how are we seeding Help Me Grow in Slo County, no pun intended? We're doing a lot of work to learn from established Help Me Grow counties. There are many smart folks who've come before us in California. I mentioned Orange County. Alameda County is, I would say, the Cadillac model of Help Me Grow. If you're curious, go check out Help Me Grow Alameda County. Fresno is another great one. Yolo County, which is where UC Davis is located, is a similar sized county and is just ahead of us in the queue, if you will. So we're following them very closely. Locally, we've also been involved in convening stakeholder gatherings. Almost a year ago now, we brought together over 60 folks to share the model, bring in somebody from Ventura County, where Help Me Grow is also in development, a little bit ahead of us, and got the buy-in from some critical stakeholders, both from the parent community, the healthcare community, early childhood educators, and others, that this is something we want to try to manifest in our county. And so we've had some follow-up gatherings to see where we're headed from there. We're pursuing a mix of funding to support Help Me Grow. First Five has committed funds in the coming year, and I would imagine the year after that, to seed some of these efforts. We've also been selected to participate in the countywide proposal for MHSA Innovation Funding, Mental Health Services Act funding, and we are one of two that is being put together in a joint proposal through the Behavioral Health Department this year, and that would support some of the work that we would be able to do in engaging with the pediatric clinics, both CHC as well as one or more private practitioners. We are also, with help from our public health director, mobilizing what we're calling our pediatrician champions. There are, I would say, at least three or four who are already very excited about this effort. And to grow the choir, we're hoping to host a continuing medical education forum this fall that focuses on developmental screenings in the context of pediatric work. And then finally, we're working really hard to develop a concrete concept for this model of a centralized hub that I described before, one of those components. What will that look like? How would it get funded? Where might it be housed? Those kinds of things. And so we're designing that model right now with help from local stakeholders and some smart people outside the county. Okay, finally, if you remember back to that list, we're advocates. We have an advocacy agenda that we develop every year, and the 2018 goals in each of our four priority areas, you can see some of these goal areas we also provide funding towards, and some of them we don't, but what our commission has said is these eight focal points are areas that we want to be engaged in the conversation at both the local and the state level. So in the area of perinatal readiness, we are working hard with our partners to look at models around home visiting for new parents. How can we make it more accessible for families who come home from the hospital and are freaking out to get the support that they need? We have some of that sort of service that comes out of the public health department, but not nearly enough to reach all the families that could use that. Cannabis is not even on the horizon anymore, I can't say. It's here, and we would like to be involved in public awareness building as advocates around the potential effects of cannabis use on children, both prenatally and postnatally. In health, I just described our work on Help Me Grow. That's pretty evident in our advocacy around developmental screening. And we continue to be fierce advocates in the area of oral health care and disease prevention. I don't have to tell you as health commissioners how important children's teeth are to their overall health. In learning, we are very interested in continuing at the local level what State First Five has done to amplify this concept of parents as child's first teacher through the Talk, Read, Sing, and other campaigns. And the other big area of focus for us in advocacy locally and at the state level is looking at how do you create a community where childcare is both high quality and affordable. It's the biggest nut to crack. If you want my honest opinion, and this entire matrix here, that's the one that's both the hardest and the most important to try to solve. I also think that it relates to, on that final column in the family advocacy work that we're doing, I think it relates directly to our advocacy around safe, affordable homes for children. Because if you imagine the pie chart of how a family spends its budget in a month, It's housing and it's childcare. And so if we can't solve housing in the early childhood advocacy world, my gosh, we should be working as hard as we can to try to shrink that slice of the pie that has to do with childcare. So those two I see as hardwired. And finally, last but not least, my favorite of our advocacy projects, I mentioned it earlier, is advocacy around family-friendly workplaces. And stay tuned for more on that. This is going to be a big year around family-friendly workplace in San Luis Obispo County. So considerations when we think about our advocacy work, the cost of living, our geographic spread in this county, transportation challenges, the stresses of early parenting. How do parents find supports in this well-meaning system of systems and disconnected, siloed supports? How do we help them find the supports that they need? And of course, how do we always make sure that children are not victims of child abuse or neglect? Okay, on to fun stuff. I don't know how many of you at the doctor's office or at a coffee shop have ever picked up the Slow Journal. If you haven't recently, take a look on, I think, page 3 every month. We showcase a different hands-on hero. This is one of my favorite public awareness campaigns that we engage in at First Five. We give shout-outs once a month with our partner agencies across the county to people who are doing fantastic work in the trenches with children. We didn't limit it to 0 to 5 because children don't stop being children the day they turn 6. And we married this campaign together with another of my favorite campaigns, and I think it might be the next page. Yes, with our Children's Bill of Rights for San Luis Obispo County. I believe your commission may have signed off on the Children's Bill of Rights several years ago. It was a document that we, along with a number of organizations and kids throughout the county, came up with back in 2013. There are 12 rights. There happen to be 12 months of the year, and so it's a beautiful way to marry two campaigns. There's a hero each month that embodies the spirit of that particular right. So, for example, this month, the month of June, is the right of children to see a doctor, a dentist, or a counselor if they need to. And so we partnered with Transitions Mental Health this year for the month of June, and they selected a therapist named Gina Sears who uses equine therapy to work with children, largely teenagers. So if you go find the Slow Journal, you'll see a page, full-page ad on Gina Sears, and if you turn on Channel 19, you will see a video that our friends over at San Luis Obispo County Office of Education put together for her. So every month, a new hero. If you want to see the whole archive, please do go see our website, firstfiveslow.org, and you can check out a year and a half's worth of amazing people in all walks of life that help manifest this Children's Bill of Rights. And by the way, I know you haven't opened it yet, but I did give you your very own copy of the Children's Bill of Rights, so you'll be able to see all 12. One of the statements that launches the Children's Bill of Rights has to do with the role of adults, and I'll just read it for you. It says, as the adults of San Luis Obispo County, one of our greatest hopes as a community is that our children grow up with healthy minds, bodies, and spirits that enable them to maximize their potential. May we, together, demonstrate daily that our youth are our highest priority, as evidenced by our collective commitment of time, money, sustained effort, and unified support. May we cultivate our understanding of child development and use it to nurture, guide, challenge, and encourage our children along their many paths. So, back to the question I asked the Board of Supervisors at the beginning of my presentation, and I'll, for the sake of argument, ask you again, what if our society's success was measured by the well-being of our youngest children? And our families and our public and private leaders weighed every decision with the question, how might this choice affect them? So, that was my official presentation. I will.
Thank you.
I don't know how far over my limit I am.
Great. Oh, you have no limit.
You have no limit.
So, let's start with questions. Candace, do you have any?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you so much. That was amazing. 4 people are on your staff. That's it?
Yeah.
You guys are magicians.
We work hard and we love it.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell. So I guess I had a couple questions about funding.
Yes.
So you don't have to rely on any federal money.
We receive some Medi-Cal administrative activities reimbursement funds because the work that we do, some of it is reimbursable through what's called MAA billing, M-A-A billing. So that's a federal program. It's administered through the Public Health Department, mm-hmm. but it's a drop in the bucket. For years it was under 20,000. I think this year we'll maybe get 50,000. Okay. But the vast majority of our funding in San Luis Obispo County for the work we do comes through the tobacco tax. And it's a monthly appropriation that we get. One thing I forgot to mention is our organizational structure is rather odd. We are a government agency, but we are not inside the county of San Luis Obispo. We're an independent public agency. Some First Fives in some counties, when they were established back in 1999, were absorbed within, say, a public health department or general administration, or I think maybe even a county office of ed. Pardon?
As was us.
I'll explain it later. No, we've always been an independent special public agency, but we used to have more, we were more tethered to the county in our early years. We contracted for human resources, for example, whereas now we do all of that work ourselves. We still do have a relationship with the county in that the funds come from the state into the county general fund, and then we manage our funds with a small contract with the county auditor controller's office. Mm-hmm. It's time for us to be looking for additional sources of revenue to support this work, whether we administer those funds or we help our partners administer those funds. I'll give you an example. It wasn't the bulk of the work. I think that Dr. Bornstein probably and Kathleen Carley and some others in the oral health program did the bulk of the work, but we committed staff resources, human resources, to help work on oral health grants that were coming from the state of California about a year ago. And several years back, we did something similar with the California Endowment. But it's also time for us to be looking for additional sources. The Mental Health Services Act funding is one example of that effort. And in other counties in California, First Fives are more actively involved in generating additional sources of revenue through partnerships with local foundations. I think in the urban cores of Los Angeles and San Francisco, for example, it's a lot easier to do that kind of partnering. Mm-hmm. Say First Five Los Angeles, I think, has partnerships, for example, with the Irvine Foundation. I'm not positive about that, but just by way of example. And there are some First Fives that are recipients of other local tax dollars, but we haven't really looked at that. Mm-hmm. So,
right, but it sounds like you guys are looking towards the future. I was just wondering about the stability of the tax.
It's going down. Right. Yes, it's for the last several years. It's been going down at about a 3.5 rate of decline every year, and we're predicting that that's going to increase with the advent of e-cigarettes. There's a little bit that's come back, but that's sort of a bad news, good news story. That's not what we want.
Right.
And so, sometimes people talk about First Five being the kind of organization that sort of plans its own obsolescence. That might have been the early plan. But by now, after 20 years of work in the community, I think people across the state recognize that this is a movement that should stay because mm-hmm. we have connections locally. We have this network across the state of California. And so there's a lot of conversation about how to maximize that for the benefit of children across the state. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, totally. Great. Great. I have one more question, I guess, more about the programs. And I think you kind of touched on this a little bit, but how do you determine who you're missing? Do you know what I mean? So you touched on the undocumented folks, and I'm thinking particularly about them at this time, as well as the homeless population, things
right.
like that. How do you figure out who you might not be touching?
Yeah. Our strategic plan is meant to be somewhat nimble. Those are pretty broad brushstrokes, priority areas. We spend a lot of time out in the community ourselves mm-hmm. as staff members, and our commissioners, as you saw, it's a fairly broad kind of, they have a fairly broad reach and perspective on communities across the county. It's hard, though. Mm-hmm. It is hard to know exactly who we're missing or not missing. I'll also tell you that as generous as $1.5 million sounds at first blush, as some of our commissioners say, it's actually budget dust. we can only do so much with that funding. And so there's always this tension around what are we going to fund versus what are we going to try to advocate for or help other community organizations or policy leaders determine how to support. So it's a combination of all those things. It's what we can invest in our own little ways, either to seed fund or to take care of something that no one else would pick up. Mm-hmm. Or look for other partners who make more sense than we do.
Yeah, great. So. Thanks.
Sure.
Thank you very much for your presentation, and it's really good to see you again.
You too, Susan.
And you know what's really striking for me right now, because I moved more to working in the homeless arena, is I was here at that very first presentation of Dr. Folletti's when he introduced his ACE research, yeah. The adverse childhood effects, before he took it back to D.C. And to me, I'll never forget when he put that picture of the baby up on the screen and then superimposed it with a homeless gentleman.
Yeah.
And it was like, and he just said, how did we get from here to here? And I just feel like there needs to be, I don't know if there's enough education out there in the people that are wanting to help the homeless and their service provision, and understanding if we want to reach down and change that, we have to start early.
Yeah, Susan.
And I'm seeing it today because I work in the recovery field. I see guys come in their 30s and 40s having to have all their teeth removed. And I've asked the latest two that I just talked to, I said, did you ever have dental care?
Yeah.
And they said, no,
yeah.
Ever, never,
right.
Never.
Right.
And it's like, wow. You know, so in this same way with the homeless, and, you know, they just fall through such huge cracks.
I know.
And it just seems like we need to approach this differently in educating. We got lots of people that want to volunteer to help them, but it's like they want to prescribe how they're going to give them the help if they do the right things. And it's like, how can we have a better universal understanding of the what these people don't even get? The literacy piece is huge.
Yes, it is.
That's another issue that I'm seeing with adults. And so it's like, man, we've got to make, there's still that disconnect. And to me, it seems if we don't start connecting those two things and understanding that this was the result of this, and start getting the volunteers that are helping those adults, how can we help them understand that? So that's kind of where I'm at right now, because I've seen a lot of that just in the last couple of months. And it's like, darn, you know, Folletti brought this in almost 20 years ago.
That's right. He's been singing this song for a long time.
And this is a bipartisan issue. You talk about economics. You know, we're still building jails and doing all these things. You know, this is the most economically feasible thing we could be doing. Yeah. And then understanding the deficits that these adults have. And so how do we help with those deficits instead of just incarcerating people? And to me, in this county, we've reached the tipping point right now, so that maybe we can begin to start looking at this problem differently and thinking about it differently and coming up with some different kinds of solutions. And you did answer a couple of my others, because the perinatal substance abuse is still out there, and with the passage of the marijuana laws, it's just freaky scary. Not only the adults that just think it's no big deal because it's herbal, but the, you know, the kids literally getting into it themselves.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if I don't have any real questions other than, how can we bring this conversation out to be a complete county conversation and see that the homeless and the 0 to 5 are connected, and that those resources are because they didn't get these resources here, and we're missing the boat doing the same thing over and over again and just continuing to incarcerate people.
Right. What was Einstein's definition of insanity?
Yeah, it
doing
is.
Doing the same thing over and over, and expecting
again,
a different result.
And nothing's changed other than it keeps people employed.
Yeah.
But...
Well, thank you, Susan.
I just really like to see that conversation broaden, and I hope as you're doing advocacy out there that maybe we begin to look at some of the audiences that we haven't thought about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's those volunteers that want to help the homeless.
Right.
And so that maybe we can begin to develop some real programs that could be helpful.
So can I interject a little anecdote? It has to do with what you're talking about, and it's a good news story. I had a really wonderful visit with Wendy Lewis, the new president and CEO of the Echo Homeless Shelter, the other day. And we don't fund programs that directly serve the shelter at this point, but we just wanted a chance to get to know each other a little bit better, the Wendy's. So she showed me around, and she said that they have, you know, dozens of 0 to 5-year-old kids who live in that shelter every year. And so we got into a conversation about some of the work that we fund at First Five around early literacy. There's a program that we help support along with the Community Foundation called Raising a Reader, which is an early literacy program to help kids and their families develop a greater appreciation for books and reading. And so we got into this conversation about early literacy and reading, and a light bulb went on for her about just a really simple little addition to their family evening programming that could bring some of that in into the life experience of the folks who are living there. And so she's connected with somebody from the County Office of Education who runs the Raising a Reader program, and their minds are already spinning about what to do. I also know that the woman from the Raising a Reader program at County Office of Ed is working to develop connections and programming opportunities at 40 Prado when it opens as well. So, there are connections that need to be made in all different ways on this topic.
And encouraging the other residents there who aren't good readers, but they read well enough to help read a story to a child.
That's right.
And get them engaged in reading because they need that.
That's right. Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
First of all, thank you very much for this sector of the social problems. You know, whenever I see adult patients with a mental illness or homelessness, substance abuse, I often wonder how their children are doing, because many of them do have children, often younger than 5 years old. So I'm glad that there is a program out there watching over their children as best as we can. But I think I kind of agree with Susan that, you know, we have to, you know, basically help child development from young age so they succeed, you know, their brain develops properly, they're physically healthy, so they can become a healthy, productive adult, you know, in the future. What can we do to help you? What do you need?
That's a great question. Well, first of all, I'm glad to have this formal opportunity to talk to you and just introduce the work that we're doing. And I mean, even just from the questions that you've asked already, I'm thinking about ways that first of all, I think I should come back more often. Second of all, I think it would be helpful. I know for a while there was a representative from the Health Commission who would come to First Five Commission meetings. I think that's a great way to stay abreast of the work that we're doing. And maybe there's some kind of recurring opportunity for us at First Five to share information with the Health Commission about sort of up-and-coming priority areas for work in the future. But, Gina, I'm going to think about that question because I want this to be an increasingly broad-based community movement, not just First Five sort of carrying the mantle around this, but really having it be something that we're all saying and all doing and all bringing to as many different forums for dialogue and change as we can. I will think about that question very hard and get back to you.
I have one more question. Mm-hmm. So as you know, the Measure B 18, right, just passed. Is it passed? Is it official? Marijuana, the taxation?
I think so, yeah.
It's definitely official now, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing up on the air? Okay. Well, that funding, talk about future funding use. I mean, you know, I think there is a direct link how that funding can be beneficially used on your program.
Interesting,
right?
You should mention that. Mm-hmm. There are a number of counties, kind of like the Help Me Grow story that I told you, there are other counties that are kind of blazing the trail, and we're learning from their experiences. There are several counties across the state that have their first five commissions, as well as their staff, have gotten involved in the conversation around cannabis taxation and the use of those funds in part to support children's programs. And there are several successful examples of that, where communities have recognized both the linkages, as you described, in terms of children's health, but also just as a worthy use of tax revenue. I think back when Prop 10 came into being, part of the argument to the voters at the time was the direct link between children's health and decrease in smoking rates, but there was a lot more to it. And so I agree with you that I think this is a conversation that First Five would be well served to get more directly involved in the future. So,
I want to thank you. It was a wonderful presentation. And I kind of reflect back when I took an anthropology class in college, and one thing that stood out, and it always stayed with me, is that Margaret Mead said, if we spend as much money on preschool as we do on college, our society would be a much better place. And when you think that sums up what you've been talking about, and I really do believe that, and that's something we have to embrace as a county, that we have to spend as much money there as we do on a college education. We live in a college town. The other thing, as far as funding, that is always money is the big deal, but mental health is the other place where we need to look at the connections. So I don't know how we can go about that and help you maybe within the Health Commission to make sure that that message gets out.
Absolutely. I thank you, Jean. I'll address the mental health comment first. The project that we've had included in the proposal to receive innovation funding for the Mental Health Services Act innovation program is specifically around looking at the value of comprehensive and recurring developmental screenings for young children, 0 to 3 even, to try to catch indicators of behavioral health or mental health challenges early on and get kids and their families the help that they need as early as possible to try to address mental health in a preventive way as early as we can. So we're already starting to get moving in that direction, but would love your guidance and support moving forward in any other ways that seem appropriate. The other thing I wanted to say that I think directly reflects what you're talking about, you know, where do we spend our resources? And Susan, you talked about this as well, is it's hard at first blush to convince people of the value of prevention. How do you fund something that hasn't happened yet? It's easy to make a case for funding fixing problems that have already happened. But it's a harder argument to make, or it has been historically, to explain why it's important to invest in assets and development and prevention of problems. So that's the work for us, is to make that case.
Well, I think that goes back to the whole preschool situation also. That's the place to start that prevention. It's so much easier there. And we do in our... did you have more questions, Jean? Okay. One of the things that we definitely don't have in our county is we don't have nearly enough preschool to begin with, and we don't nearly, on top of that, have enough of early preschool. We only have 1 or 2 preschools in our entire county that take kids,
infants and toddlers,
at 18 months.
Yeah, that's true. It's a statewide crisis, and as our economy is forcing more and more families, inspiring more and more families to go to send both parents back to work, that necessitates a safe, quality experience for that place for that little one to go during the day. So you're absolutely right.
So there's that tie actually between preschool and the family-friendly workplace.
There certainly is.
You know, that we really need to look at bringing together. But that is I was surprised when we first moved here. We didn't have preschool-aged children, but we had children who had preschool-aged children. And the availability was...
Yeah.
not even that big.
Do you remember I mentioned that documentary during my presentation called The Raising of America? There's an episode. It's multiple episodes in this documentary series, but one of them, which is the one that we carted around the county and showed at different public libraries, is called Are We Crazy About Our Kids? And it showcases an experiment in universal preschool in Canada, to the north, in Montreal, mm-hmm. and it talks about the value of quality preschool to society, not just to children, but to entire society.
So how many countries have universal preschool?
I'll have to get back to you on that one. I don't know how many countries do. I will tell you this.
You can probably count on one hand, but...
Yeah, I don't know, and
but
that's another good one.
There are some, I believe, that...
Yeah. Yes.
That it is a...
That it's a universal right. I have two suggestions for TED Talks for you to check out, one of which is directly related to this. It doesn't have to do with preschool. It has to do with family leave, which is a whole other topic related to family-friendly workplace. What do we offer in our state, in our country, and in other countries around the world when it comes to family leave for parents who have just had a child? And so this talk is given by a woman named Jessica Shortall, easy to remember, Shortall. And she does an amazing job in like 12 and a half minutes in showcasing in a rather embarrassing way where the United States falls when it comes to family leave. So that's one to recommend. The other is the most recent champion around the ACEs study that you were talking about, Susan. It's a pediatrician who's based in the Bay Area. Her name is Nadine Burke Harris, and she also has a fantastic TED Talk on the topic of ACEs. It'll knock your socks off. A great way to help is to share that information with other people in your worlds, both private and public.
Good. So. Well, thank you again, and we will have you back.
Fantastic.
Soon. We would love to have regular updates how your programs are going and,
okay.
and what's going on. And as Gina mentioned, we're willing to hear whatever your requests might be. We want to help. So.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much.
Okay.
You can now open these up, when Mary Jean tells you, you can. It's kind of a smattering of materials, including a mini version of the Children's Bill of Rights. Sorry about that. A trifold and then an 8.5 by 11 sheet that describes our current funded programs, our current investments. This one's kind of fun. This is a piece that was put together by the first five executive director in Alpine County, one of the teeny, tiny first fives. I think they have 500 kids total in their county or something, but she put together this wonderful trifold called Parenting in the Tech Age. It's an app guide for parents raising young children. A couple of pieces on Talk, Read, Sing, a one-pager on 20 years at First Five Slo County, and then a more detailed version of our advocacy agenda that I showed you before. So.
Okay. So we may look through this and have you back with more specifics about one of these programs.
Terrific. Okay, terrific. And give me a call anytime if you have any additional questions or want to press me on that request for ways to get involved.
Okay.
I promise I'll come up with some. Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy. All right. Next, our health agency update, Dr. Bornstein.
Thank you. I don't know if anyone noticed me smiling ear to ear through that entire presentation because not only am I a First Five commissioner by bylaws because the public health director is, but I'm trained in pediatrics, and that was the field of medicine that I was going to go into until public health got me smitten. But the two are intricately related, and so I often forget which hat I'm wearing, First Five commissioner, public health director, because I see them as intricately connected. And we work extremely closely with First Five. The public health department does funding in both directions. And, you know, we actually live the dream sometimes of braided funding and actual collaboration. And so you heard some of that. And I'm going to talk about a couple of those areas tonight. Actually, I won't go over. I was going to talk a little bit about Help Me Grow, and I neglected to realize that that is one of the things that First Five is taking lead on, but is very exciting opportunity to really. I think this is the third time in the county's history that we're making an attempt at moving toward a universal developmental screening and referral system for our county's youngest, but I think we're going to get it done this time. And cannabis that you mentioned, I was going to say a word about that. It is definitely on the advocacy agenda of First Five, both at the local level and also the state is really encouraging First Five's chapters to get involved because there's so many obvious implications for the pregnant woman, for the young baby, for young children. Whereas public health and the health agency in general has, for the better part of a year, watched our county, and you've heard from Guy Savage, who the assistant CAO, it doesn't get really much higher than that. So there's a focus of the counties on how we implement cannabis policy, regulation, implementation of program, et cetera, in our county. But it has very much been focused up till now on the environment of public safety and land use. And so I was very excited about the passage of, and nothing's definite yet, but pretty much we can tell even with a couple of thousand votes outstanding that, you know, a 72% or whatever it is at that we are likely to see passage of that tax in our county. And it will come along slowly, but I think it's the first time that some of us who have been waiting a little bit in the wings on the cannabis agenda in our county, watching some of the other counties and my counterparts taking a more proactive approach, that even though I believe we have universality on our board as it exists today with acknowledgement that there are health implications to the use of cannabis, we haven't really gotten off step one to really develop some advocacy, education, policy agenda around that, about what we're exactly going to do with respect to getting the messaging out and watching for the welfare of those who choose to use. And so completely incidentally, last week, we had our first meeting. I think it was on Election Day. So even before the first vote was in, I felt, you know, very positive about it. We pulled together internally because there's so many different components to it in the health agency. There's an environmental health and hazmat component, which is, you know, quite a stretch from, you know, youth utilization to working through WIC and other collaborators on how do we make sure breastfeeding moms know that it actually can be transmitted in the milk to newborn babies and edibles and, you know, in the form of gummy bears, which notwithstanding been, you know, made illegal in our state, but, you know, there's a lot of different ways that you can unknowingly have cannabis enter the bodies of our youngest children. So anyway, we finally are really getting a dialogue going internal to our agency where behavioral health and substance use and mental health, because there may well be a trigger point, especially in high use in adolescents, as well as our home visiting program and our WIC program and our tobacco cessation program and environmental health and such. And so I just shared with Wendy, who equally First Five is looking to, you know, work on the same agenda, that's our first step is internally, and then we're going to, you know, very quickly, hopefully, broaden that circle to partners like First Five, P5CAN, et cetera, and the broader community that are thinking about and worrying about cannabis. You know, what that will mean in terms of, I'm not delusional about a small amount of tax money in year one being all things that we might want to hope for in the health agency, but I do feel positive that we can at least now be at the table as an equal partner to some of the other entities. So be that as it may, that's where we are at this point. I did also want to mention that today where budget hearings started and pretty much ended, with the exception of the piece that maybe Mary Jane will talk about, the other agencies that the county funds. But the health agency had its budget hearings today, and there was nothing dramatic to report. So, with the exception of that, I think is, you know, moving us in a good direction, some increased capacity, particularly in case management for mentally ill individuals served by the behavioral health department, and some dialogue around where, you know, the jail healthcare services are going. But with respect to public health, we had asked for a few things. It's a tight budget time, so we didn't get any of those, but not completely unexpected, knowing what the lay of the land was. But certainly it was good to have that process come forward and ready us for another year of continuing to beat the drum on these kinds of things that you've been talking about, which is a dollar spent on prevention. Every year I put in some, well, that's not true. My first 5 to 7 years here, I entered in an environment where I was told before I could even open my mouth, we had to cut, 20-30% of our budget because it was an exceptional fiscal period of time with the Great Recession. But you know, starting 2014, 15, 16, I at least make sure to present the evidence of a dollar spent early. It results in savings in all the kinds of places that you've been talking about. I have a folder full, as I was listening to this, of all the articles that have come across the New England Journal of Medicine. New York Times had one just a couple of weeks ago on why we as a society don't pay for prevention. It's just the way our brains are wired. And so it has been my entire career to be pushing that folder uphill. I will continue to do so, as will all the people who work in the industry of prevention. It's a hard hill to climb, but it will ultimately, as there is evidence across different states, countries, domains, that it works. So hopefully we'll see another time where fiscal improvements are such that we can keep coming back to that discussion. One positive thing is the community health assessment has been completed. We sent it out to everyone for 2-week comment period. We've got all our comments back, and we hope to be at print by next week. So thank you all for that. Step one, to be followed shortly thereafter by our community health improvement plan, of which we've got all the pieces together, but, you know, these days you can't put anything out that's not, you know, shiny in pictures, and that takes a lot of effort, but we'll be there shortly. And then just one other thing I wanted to mention in the world of environmental health, because this is an entity that has come before this commission a lot, is our surfer community really cares. Not just they, but they have been one of the strongest voices in monitoring the health of our ocean waters off of our coast. It's both a beautiful coast and sometimes can be filled with varying elements of caca, what have you. So, sorry, I couldn't come up with a better word in the moment. But anyway, so I just want to say, you know, kudos to Pismo Beach as a city. If you didn't hear the news, they have turned it around in a big way from being on the beach bummer list 2 years ago to being one of the top 10, scores for the health of the bay in that community. I don't think we had any beach bummers this year. So hopefully we're continuing to go in a good direction of the monitoring matters, because it tells us where our problems are, and then we can actually work with communities to address it. I do want to mention one thing in that regard that's going to be interesting as it comes forward next year. There is a scientific entity called NOWCAST that is trying to remember. I think they're associated with one of the UC schools. But anyway, they've got a modeling version, so you don't actually go and test the water. But they have, based on meteorology and a host of other factors, stream flow, etc., tides, determined based on a mathematical model which ocean sites on which weeks are going to be in good stead versus not. And they have not partnered with counties who are doing the actual testing. So I'm trying to get the word out that when they start reporting, and they have chosen three communities in our county that they will report on. I think it's Cayucas, Avila, and maybe San Simeon. I'm not remembering the third. That we may have actually discrepant results. And so I just want to make sure that people understand the difference in one is a mathematical model, one is actual testing, and hopefully we come together as that reporting is going to be done on a regular basis in the coming year. And if not, we'll hopefully have the opportunity to work with them and help them, I don't know, find a way to fine-tune, if not the messaging, actually the modeling, so that we do come into concordance on a regular basis. But so that was some interesting news for us to hear that we've been had several of our beaches selected for their reporting, and we'll just see how that goes. Anyway, that is my report.
Thank you. Any questions for Dr. Bornstein? Did our new health agency director, he got started?
Oh, yes. Yes, Mr. Hill, Mike Hill, has been in place since May 21. So is this week four, is it? Anyway, doing fine, drinking from the proverbial fire hose, information. And
at some point, I assume he will come, and
yes.
We will all get to meet him and what have you. Okay,
yes.
Good. I had just one item I wanted to ask you about, Dr. Bornstein. Something came across my desk today that I see starting the 1st of July, Parkinson's is going to be on a mandatory reporting, or it's going to be a mandatory reporting requirement to the state.
Yes,
department.
Yeah,
okay.
It's the first.
How are they
going to
notify who the providers that must report are? Do you know?
I think it's all providers.
Is it all?
Who make
okay.
A diagnosis, much like the cancer registry. So, you know, it could be an internist versus an oncologist who makes the first diagnosis. But if they get duplicate reports, they'll weed those out.
Yeah. And okay.
I'm not sure of the details, but thank you for bringing that
well,
up.
Well, they've established it's like a registry, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, it's a statewide like a registry. It's the newest disease-based registry in some time, and it's specific to Parkinson's disease that all providers must report new cases to the state, directly to the state, much as is the same as cancer. As opposed to providers are used to reporting communicable diseases and some other things mm-hmm. to the local health department, lab results, et cetera. But this is a direct state report.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good. All right. Well, why don't we do commissioner updates? Who wants to start? Gina, you want to start?
I have nothing to report.
Yeah, that was a good start.
Actually, I have a few things to comment on. I went to the Adult Services Policy Council meeting, and it was wonderful. Laura Jameson came to the meeting. She brought her little brochure and told all these not-for-profit people about the program, the Medically Indigent Services Program. So it was nice to see her there, introduce herself, and know that that program is going forward. Another thing that was taking place there was the palliative care program, and that's something we should consider because it's going to be a focus in healthcare for our future, looking at palliative care. And it was a great presentation from Central Coast Home Health. The last thing that I just want to make sure everyone knows in the community is the senior information guide is now updated. So we have the 18 to 2020 new senior information guide. It has a lot of wonderful information. You can call the Area Agency on Aging and get copies wherever you're at. They have them at the senior centers, of course, and all the other institutions. But those were the main things that I had to share.
Good. Thank you. Candace?
No updates that I'm aware of.
Okay. Susan?
Yes, there was a presentation by Laurel Weir to the Board of Supervisors with, I think I talked about this at the last meeting, the short list and the medium list of the things that, projects that they wanted to see happen for increasing opportunities for homeless to become housed. And this morning, the Board of Supervisors took the number one recommendation, which was to bump up the 50 Now program to 60 Now and add an additional 10 opportunities for the most chronically ill, most fragile of the homeless for them to be focused on and be housed. So now it will be 60 in our county.
Step forward.
Good news.
Good.
Yeah.
I have a couple of things. As Dr. Bornstein mentioned, Wednesday, the Board of Supervisors will be going through the community-based preventive health grant applications and deciding if they will take our recommendations as a committee that we met. I think I mentioned last time, but I'll just re-mention again. We're suggesting $404,000 in preventive health grant money. Remember, that's tied to the tobacco tax, so that is a little bit of a shrinking fund also. And then the community-based organizations, we have approximately $1.5 million that we're suggesting in that. So they will go through and hopefully fund most of those, and some of them they may even find a little additional money to put in towards it. I went to the Oral Health Coalition meeting this last week. They are working on a strategic plan for the coalition, so we looked at the first draft of that. Talked about a couple of other things. Remember way back, I don't know how many years, a couple of years now, when they were applying for those grants, one of the things we wanted to do was a virtual dental home for some. And it got tweaked a number of times. But to some degree, CHC is working with the coalition, I will say, to get that put together. And surprisingly, Tolosa up in North County, they got a call from one of the universities where somebody had all of a sudden dropped out of one of their programs and they had a slot open. So they are actually working with the university to put together a virtual dental home that will be at one of the schools in Shandon, I believe. So reaching out to those communities. So it is a step forward. It's never as fast as we would like it to go, but at least we're not going back the other way. We are making many steps going forward with that. And then lastly, the Healthy Communities Work Group. We're continuing to work on our housing, I guess, forum, we might call it. It is October the 10th. You will all be receiving an invitation to that. We've come up with health and housing, building the connection, I believe is what we're going to be talking about. We have, I think, an impressive panel that we have put together to be part of that, as well as a really good keynote speaker as well, and Dr. Bornstein will participate with all of us and have some comments throughout that. So it's a Thursday. It is, we'll begin shortly after noon, finish late afternoon, early evening, and we'll finish off with some nice refreshments. So it will be worth staying for. October 4th, and it's in San Luis at the Vets Hall. So as the agenda gets totally ironed out, Laurel Weir will be on our panel, somebody from SLOCOG, somebody from the Home Builders Association, Habitat for Humanity. Just we had a little bit of trouble holding our panel to a size that wouldn't need to be a full day's presentation. But I think it will be actually very worthwhile and a very interesting afternoon for all of us. So that is what I have. Let's go ahead and move on to our committee reports. We don't have too much, except I did. We've often talked about our legislative committee and what we do or what we can't do or whatever, but I just came across my desk today a legislative issue that I thought was fairly interesting, and you all probably heard it also, but last week on Election Day, San Francisco did vote to ban the sale of flavored tobacco products. So are they the first city Penny, do you know?
About they're one of, if they're not the first city, they're one of the first to do that. So hopefully some of the other coalitions and so forth can, we can encourage some of our other jurisdictions to do the same thing. I do believe the nominating committee has things to report and ask us for. And Jean will, because Claire is not here this evening, Jean will do the that report.
Okay. As part of the nominating committee, I'd like to recommend from the committee reappointments for Mary Jean Sage, Chris Kington Barker, Jean Raymond, Susan Warren, Candace Weinstead, and for the new expiring terms of July the 1st, 2022.
So those are our commissioners whose terms, and isn't that just about all of us that are here this evening? So is there a second to Jean's motion?
I second. Okay.
We have, it's been moved and seconded that we accept the recommendation of the nominating committee to renew the reappointments of these commissioners. Any discussion? Shall we vote? And can we just do a voice vote, Jean? Do we? Okay. All right. All those in favor of that recommendation, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Welcome aboard, everyone. Or welcome on the continued train ride, whatever you want to put it. All right. Your okay. Next item, Jean.
The next recommendation for the new officers for the fiscal year 2018-19, chair is Mary Jean Sage. Vice chair is Chris Kington Barker. Secretary is Jean Raymond.
Do I have a second to that motion?
Sorry. I'll second.
Okay. Yeah. Any discussion? So I believe we'll vote the same way. All those in favor of that recommendation, please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. We have our executive committee for the upcoming year. So our next meeting in July is our retreat, when we will meet over at the health agency conference room. The date for that meeting is July the 9th. I'd like to suggest that anybody who can't be there, maybe let us know fairly soon. Maybe we can even put out an email to everyone who wasn't here this evening, Jean, to see. It's one of the two times during the year when we decide the programs that we want to have and the things that we want to work on, so it's important that we're all there. So if we find that it's a time when a lot of us cannot be there, then we might think about rescheduling it. I'm not saying we are, but you know, if we're only going to have three people there, then we probably, and it would be a little easier to reschedule because we don't have to think about getting the board chambers here because it's over at that meeting. So check our calendars, everyone, and if for some reason you can't make it, why, send a quick email off to Jean. Anything else this evening? Thank you all for being here. We appreciate it. And we will see you next month at the agency conference room. Thanks. We adjourn.
Okay.